everybody. My name is Diego Dragato, and welcome back to Honest and Gay, the gayest podcast on the internet. So, it is currently, when I am recording this, starting the fourth week of the Donald Trump presidency. Oh, sorry, President Donald Trump. Ugh. We're just calling him the evil emperor, and we're the resistance. You know, we're straight up living in Star Wars. It's literally the worst. So far, all of his cabinet seems to be having problems doing their job correctly. Donald Trump has been tweeting saying that his job is a lot harder than he thought. And we're just gonna see what happens, you know? Every week, there's something new to talk about. If you are ever in the mood for listening to political news regarding around Donald Trump's presidency, I highly recommend checking out TrumpCast. It is a podcast run by Slate. It is a pretty funny podcast, and the one thing I really like about it is they find humor in serious things, but they say it in a way that makes you kind of laugh at the situation, but then you actually kind of cry because that's actually how the situation is right now. It's pretty intense. I just suggest checking them out. So, first things first, I wanted to say that sex and gender are two different things. But when I listened to a Los Angeles Times op-ed piece about, here's the title, "Are Gender Feminists and Transgender Activists Undermining Science?" That's the op-ed piece. I'm just going to read it paragraph by paragraph, and then we're just going to analyze it. Well, I'm going to analyze it because I was seriously livid. All right. "In the world of radical identity politics, two groups with very different philosophies have ignored science in the name of advancing equality. Gender feminists and transgender activists." There is a niche in the feminist movement that are gender feminists and transgender feminists, but most feminists believe, you know, in gender equality, and that's kind of one of the foundations of the feminist movement, because we're talking about women's oppression being gender oppression, which relates to sexism, you know. And I'm just like, okay, first paragraph in, and I'm just like, what are you talking about? "Gender feminists, who are distinct from traditional equity feminists, refuse to acknowledge the role of evolution in shaping the human brain. Instead of promoting the idea of sex differences are caused by a socializing process that begin at birth." Right off the bat, he's really confusing sex and gender. So, in the first paragraph, he said that gender feminists are ignoring the role of evolution, and they say this idea of sex differences are caused by socializing process, gender socialization, that begins at birth. But he's confusing sex with gender. Sex is biological. We're not saying, as feminists, that sex changes because of society. No, that's biological. What we're saying changes more as society grows and develops, that's gender. This person is confusing the two. So let's try to, you know, decode all this stuff. And then gender, according to them, is a construct. We are born as a blank slate, and it is parents and society at large that produce the differences we see between women and men in adulthood. It's very true. Because of gender roles. And gender roles, gender expression, and the way that we are raised really shapes our identity and our understanding of gender. You know, when we look at gender, because all of these terms, you know, evolution, sex, gender, the terms themselves are socially constructed, but what they represent could either be biological, explained by science, or they could also fall under gender socialization. So, that is true. I mean, gender is a blank slate because the social construction of gender isn't brought to our attention until after birth. I mean, we're not real. I mean, we are real, but we're not conscious yet. So that's when we begin to understand it. And yes, we produce to see the differences of women and men in adulthood. Yes, different gender roles, different gender expressions, how women and men interact, how they talk, how they speak, how they dress, all of these things. We don't know the difference until we are taught what the differences are. The idea that our brains are identical sounds lovely, but the scientific evidence suggests otherwise. The idea that our brains are identical, but science evidence sounds suggests otherwise. There's a ton of scientific evidence to refute that claim, to dispute that claim. That's what science is. It's always a push and pull, this fighting mentality of like, what's right, what's wrong? And it's like they're gonna have a study this week and a study the next week refuting that study. So science is ever changing. So I can't say definitively like one study or one research that's gonna suggest the overall accompaniment of what's happening. Like that science is gonna change. The idea that our brains are identical sounds lovely, which refers to the author saying that gender feminists say that brains are identical at birth, but scientific evidence suggests otherwise. So I guess scientists like this person say that brains are different sizes based on your biological sex. I'm not using gender. I'm not using gender, just like how they shouldn't be using gender in the place of sex. They like to interchange it. They're two different things. Just like how race and ethnicity are two different things, but a lot of people tend to blur them together. It's not the same thing. Gender feminists also point to a single study published in 2015, which claims it's possible to tell the difference between a male and female brain. Okay, that's one study. I mean, I hope feminists rely on multiple studies, but again, I don't know who you are and I don't know where your research is coming from. Like, I don't really want you to speak for feminists unless you are a feminist. If you really want to get a gender feminist perspective, maybe you should reach out to a gender feminist. They can articulate this better than the way that you're summarizing their points. Just like we don't want to step over our toes and say what you're doing and summarize what you're doing. That's your job. We're not here to speak for you. But you seem to speak for us, so. But when a group of researchers reanalyzed the underlying data, they found the brains could be correctly identified as male and female with 98% to 77% accuracy. See, that's what I was talking about earlier, about how science, when you look back at the science, you see it from a new perspective or a different angle, and you might stumble upon the study as incorrect, or you might find more evidence to support that study, which makes it more accurate. That's what science is. Like, it's a bunch of, testing different hypotheses and different observations and different, theories and all this stuff, laws, and you challenge it. That's what science is. It's a challenging game to try to figure out what's the truth. But I digress. In another study published in 2016, researchers used a large sample, larger sample, okay, in conjunction with high-resolution neuroimaging, and were able to successfully classify a brain by its sex 93% of the time. See how they say sex? Sex is biological. We are talking about sex. When we're talking about biological factors that affect someone's sex, we are not talking about gender. Honestly, like, I don't know who copy edited this or who read this, but they should have really brought a feminist on to make sure that they didn't make this huge error. Again, it's an op-ed piece. It's more of an opinion based on research and facts. But, with your opinion, you should really have the other side to, show their opinion, and that way you can tell the audience, like, hey, this is my opinion. This is their opinion. You can come up with your own conclusion. You have the right to do that. You have the right to an opinion. I'm not saying you can't have an opinion. It's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, maybe you should have done a little bit more research on the two and understood it from a historical standpoint. But again, I digress. We're talking about a gender identity, which is an idea that you have, this thought that you have about yourself. And that's one thing that a feminist, feminists came up with this idea that sex and gender were two different things. And some part of the population still doesn't see a difference. But over time, as public opinion and public awareness changes with these topics, we might see a more understanding society about it. So let's continue reading. But I'm definitely a more calm than when I read it earlier. I was reading it in front of my friends, and they were just like, "Oh my God, you're so like upset about this." I'm like, "I am," and I threw my phone. Like it was bad. So this person is talking about their experience about Blake Slate, and views are willing to agree in private conversations that neurological sex differences do exist. So they're taught this person. Is talking about how gender feminists in private, concede to neurological sex differences do exist. I'm sorry. Who are you talking about? Like, what are these private conversations? Like, did no one want to go on the record? Like, you could have just said like a group of feminists that I know. But it's fine. But they fear that acknowledging as much publicity will justify female oppression. So. This person, this author, is talking about if feminists acknowledge sex differences, whether that be physical, mental, psychological, that it will kind of justify women's oppression. Which there is an argument out there for that. But when we look at oppression and we look at, domination and subjugation, we see that it's power. And power, most of the time, happens when people of psychological, mental, or physical strength try to overpower someone who is, quote unquote, not as strong. But when we look at it from a historical standpoint, like you can have those factors, like, yeah, that can be benefiting you or not benefiting you based on the situation, but power has more to do with socialization, and once we start educating people, particularly men, because most of the time through gender socialization, masculine culture and male culture kind of adheres to this locker room banter of, oppressing women and having women only there to serve the man. I mean, we've seen it in Donald Trump's presidency. We've seen it countless times with other people, and it's just we need to get to that point where we start educating men about power relations and, interpersonal violence. And once we start socializing them to understand that women are just, the same as men and they need to have the same respect. Women need to be respected. They need to be treated as human beings. They need to be given basic human fundamental rights. And once they do that, then this notion that women are weaker are it's gonna dissipate because people won't see that. They'll be like, "Oh, this is a woman. She's equal to me." Yeah, she might have physical characteristics that don't match up with mine, but she's still equal. So let's go on with our day. End of story. But let me continue. This is backwards. As it states, female typical traits are seen as inferior and less worthy of respect. Basically, what I was saying right now. This is the real issue of the movement failed to address. Nobody wants to be female typical, not even women. See, this is where I had a real big problem with this article. Because I don't know why they would want to overgeneralize and say that women don't want to be female typical, or basically, they don't want to be feminine. Women don't want to be categorized as a female. And I don't understand how you can say that, honestly. I mean, There are people out there that don't want to be seen as feminine. They try to be more masculine, whether that be through their social groups, whether that be through their job, whether that just be through their family. I don't know what their family dynamic is. But to say that women don't want to be feminine is pretty inaccurate to say. And guess what? It is your opinion. You have every right to your opinion. But, I would really love with this op-ed to have some feedback from women, from other women, from feminists. Like, that's what an op-ed piece should be. It shouldn't just be one-sided. Like, that's not journalism. And you're a journalist. You need to be able to report on both sides. You can't just show the one side that you like and have all this evidence for that one side, but then don't show any evidence to support the other side. I mean, you said that one study in 2015, that was your only evidence for that other side. It's just like journalism is about the truth. It's about being fair. It's about, reporting. It's not about here, this is the side that's better or worse. Like, that's not your call. As a journalist, you're supposed to provide information. And as the public, they're supposed to decipher what is wrong and what is right. That's not our job to tell them what to think. Let's continue reading, shall we? We're almost done. Distortion of science hinders progress. Okay. When gender feminists start refuting basic biology, people stop learning. And the larger point about equality is lost. I don't know about that, because earlier in the article, you said how these radical identities are coming in the way of science. But these radical identities are trying for equality. But then you're saying that science is also for equality. So those two statements kind of contradict. As feminists, we're not saying like, oh, ignore the science, but it's like understand what the science is saying based on these different definitions. Science talks about more sex because that's biological. Those are chromosomes. Those are sorry. Those are chromosomes. And we're talking about gender identity, identity. Like with myself, let me just put myself in the framework of this article. I am a gay, gender fluid person, but my biological sex is male because that's what I was born with. I was born with a penis, okay? And I'm not saying that all, that's my sex. My male sex is I have a penis. But my gender identity is gender fluid, someone that does not adhere to the gender binary. I don't see myself as male or female or a mixture of both. I just see myself as not those two. I see myself as different. And and my sexual orientation, I'm attracted to men. I mean, all of these identities can overlap, but they're all individual. They're all separate things. And I really didn't like this article because it didn't do a good job of reporting like information. And then it says, unlike gender feminists, transgender activists, okay, here's another assertion, an assumption. Transgender activists firmly believe that gender is a biological rather than social reality. But of course, they don't believe that it's necessary to tie to sex and at birth. So again, I don't know who he's talking about or what activists he's talking about, but it's like, again, you're making an assumption about these individuals, about these activists. Because let me tell you, when you talk to different activists, trans activists in the community, whether that be well-known ones, whether that be, friends or colleagues, then you begin to understand that that statement that was just made in the LA Times is pretty false. I mean, if you went to the Women's March and you talked to transgender activists, they'll tell you that socialization supersedes biology because we're talking about gender identity. We're not talking about sex. If we were talking about sex, then it's biology. Like, we understand that. We understand that science is on biology, which biology is on to sex. So we're not getting in the way of science. You're just misinformed as to what we are contributing to that discussion of science and gender and the feminist movement. So let's continue reading. They also believe that gender is quite stable early on. No. We say that the socialization of gender as an institution is stable, but gender is fluid. That's we're not, we don't say that, a binary is stable. We just say that the institution that teaches, that socializes these children is stable. So they also believe that gender identity is quite stable early on and warranting a transition, not only for transgender adults, but also young children who say they were born in a wrong body. Okay. From a scientific perspective, here's their opinion, but their opinion to talk over people and to talk for people was already mentioned. So from a scientific perspective, they particularly, I don't see like from a scientific perspective, they like how are you saying from your perspective they talk? Like it's basically saying like how I see your problem. It's like if we talk about, race. If somebody, a white reporter, was going to talk about the black community, it's like from my perspective, the African American community, like stay in your lane. Like don't talk about other people. Like no, that's not okay. Like white people should not talk for black people, and black people shouldn't talk for white people. They should understand where they're coming from and let them speak for themselves. When an oppressed group is able to speak for themselves, they are able to be given a voice, strength. They are going to feel like their voice matters. And we've seen this throughout history. We've seen this through history textbooks in America. A lot of when we talk about slavery and civil rights and all this stuff, they tend to focus on like the slave owners and the whites, but they never let the oppressed groups speak for themselves. They just overgeneralize what their experience is. And that's not okay. Like you need to allow people to speak their perspective because then it will help people and the public better understand their perspective because they are saying it themselves. But I digress. Currently available research lecture includes four studies. Okay. Published in the last 9 years, suggesting that 61 to 81% of gender dysphoric children will distinct and grow up to be a gay adult. Okay. Or in my case, a straight adult. Okay. So it's kind of that argument where it's like, if you are trans and, but does that have to coincide with your sexuality? No, because they're two different things. When we look at gender identity, here, let me just provide a quick understanding of let's Caitlyn Jenner, let's talk about her. So, her gender identity, she transitioned from male to female. So, she's a transgender female, or just a female, however you want to say it. And she is still attracted to women because her. That's just who she is. She's attracted to women. And does that mean that her sexuality is not lesbian? Like, no. You can just say it from a biological standpoint that she is sexually attracted to women, which means that she would be straight. And she said that countless times on television, on the radio, on articles. So to say that, in my case, a straight adult, it's like I really don't think you should speak for the trans community. While transitioning can be beneficial for trans adults, okay, it therefore doesn't make sense to treat trans children in the same way. Okay, I mean, trans adults were trans children. So to say that you don't want to treat trans children the same way because then they'll somehow be different than trans adults, like there's too many problems with this article. How I see it, being, someone that doesn't adhere to the gender binary, we should treat people with respect and we should help them better understand their identities because once they stop, feeling ashamed, feeling guilty, having depression, turning to self-harm, hating themselves. The more we address those issues and the more we tell our kids and more we tell our children that it's okay to be who you are, that You don't have to conform to society because society's ideas will change. You can be who you are. That's who you are. That's who you are as a human being. We're going to support you and we're going to validate you and we're going to make sure that you're okay to make sure that you are loved. That's our goal as feminists, to give people a voice, to make sure they're equal and they're supported and that they're given a platform to succeed. Nevertheless, transgender activists and their allies have branded distinctions as a myth, but those who suggest otherwise are called bigots, dismemberly, trolls. Okay. Well, we don't like to use the word bigots unless you're being a bigot. We kind of just say misinformed or, just haven't seen it from a different perspective. This idea that some gender dysphoric people may grow up to be comfortable with their birth sex is kind of threatening to the community. Not really. I mean, if you actually go into the community and you actually talk to people in the community and, you can identify as what you want. If you were questioning your gender and were saying like, oh, I think I'm transgender. Like, I think I want to transition from a male to female. And once you start going down that path and once maybe you realize like, hey, I thought this was my gender identity, but I don't feel comfortable with this identity. You can say like, hey, I'm not transitioning. Like, I'm not trans. That's fine. That's valid. We're not going to be like, oh no, since you said this, you're now this. It's like, no, it's whatever you want. Like, if you say you're this, then we respect that and move on. We don't hold that against you. We don't see you differently. We treat you just as the way you want to be treated, with respect. We don't have to say like, oh, everyone that thinks they're transgender will become transgender. Like, no, we can't say that. And we're not invalidating those people. Like, oh, you see them? Oh, you see them? Yeah, they weren't really trans, so that means all these other people aren't trans. Like, no, that's problematic. Don't say that. Don't speak for us. Like, just let the kids understand their identity on their own through healthy and through supportive channels. Don't be like, oh, since you're not this, I'm gonna shame you. Like, don't say that. It's confusing and it's discouraging. I mean, when I was going through my process of, finding out my sexuality, it was tough, I was very religious early on in my life, and my sexuality and my urges were conflicting with that. And that's why I started losing my faith multiple times. And I remember when I was, opening up to being like, I remember when I was having urges, I would just be like, oh, picture a woman, picture a woman, picture a woman, picture a woman. And I would like train my brain to be aroused to a woman because I was like forcing it. And I was like turning to God more. And I was like, God, please help me. Please, I'm not gay. I'm not gay. Please, 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 please. And that's one of the toughest battles that I've ever had to go through. And, in college, I had this person. Let's call him John. He was living on my floor, and he was bisexual. At the time, I was like actually like seeing this girl, and we were like making out and like doing some stuff, but this guy was interested in me. And naturally, he was like, oh, you should cut. This was one night. He was like, you should come over. You should watch like Adventure Time. And I was like, yeah, sure. And he kind of said it in a flirty way. And I didn't see this until after the fact. But I like walked to his dorm. I like knocked on the door. He like opened it up. His arm was on one side of the doorway. And he was kind of like leaning. He kind of looked like that seductive face, like, come in. And I was like, sure. And then his roommate was there. And I was like, okay. And we were watching Adventure Time. And, we were sitting fairly close. And he tried to hold my hand. And I was just like, oh, okay. And then I was just like putting my hand there, and I didn't stop him, and I didn't stop myself from feeling that. And I was getting really nervous, and my heart was pumping, and I was like super, super nervous. And then John was like, do you want to kiss me? And I was like, and I was like, your roommate's like right there. And I was so uncomfortable, and I was just like, no, I'm okay. I'm okay. And I totally shut him down. And then, basically, we watched TV, and then his roommate stepped out, and then like David tried to make a move, and I was like, no, it's a David, no, I'm sorry. Like, and then I would talk to him after. I was like, let's just be friends. And I kind of like shut him down, but I also shut myself down from feeling that, from allowing my sexuality to experience that. And I didn't experience something like that until my first boyfriend, where I kissed him. That was when I was 19 years old. And ever since then, I've felt validated with my sexuality, and I'm gay. So, honest and gay. Remember to live honest and gay. But yeah, so back to the article at hand. So they said they struggled to return to their birth sex in part because of fear of teasing from their classmates. They did not dare to make the change until they enrolled in high school. That has to do a lot with society and peers and social groups. And yes, that is scary because people are going to judge you, and they're going to call you a liar, and they're going to be like, oh, wow, you're just confused. But you know what? That's when you go through the different channels of support, whether that be a group on campus, whether that be your parents, whether that be your friends, not your peers, whether that be through, therapy or, self-help groups or group therapy, something like that, where you can work through those different channels of fear and begin to see them in a positive light. Change your fear into something positive. And it says, but the gender feminist and transgender movements are operating with good intention. Thanks for saying that. Namely, the desire to obtain the dignity women and transgender people rightfully deserve. Okay, that's what we're trying to do. But it's never a good idea to dismiss science in the name of complying arguments or an honorable cause. We must allow science to speak for itself. Okay. Yes, we should allow science to speak for themselves. How about we allow our communities to speak for ourselves too? You're basically speaking for us. Like, you're saying that science should speak for themselves? Hey, transgender feminists, feminists, and gender feminists should speak for themselves too. Like, don't speak for us. And we're not necessarily speaking for you either. We're just interpreting it. We interpret the science. That's how people interpret it. Yeah, so that was the article. I think this was a good way to kind of say what I needed to say and say it, more in depth, basically analyze the article. As a journalist and as someone who wants to report on the truth, I do have my opinions and I do understand what an op-ed piece does. I just wish that the op-ed would have given people in the transgender movement and people that are feminists, that are gender feminists or transgender feminists, they were given a platform to at least be quoted. What I suggest everyone do right now is subscribe to the podcast if you're still here. Follow me on Instagram, leave a review on iTunes, tell me how I'm doing. And if you want to reach out to me, if you want to talk to me about, your gender or your sexuality, or anything, if you just want to talk to someone, if you need some advice, shoot me an email at honestandgay@gmail.com. If you see an article, if you see an article that I would enjoy reading, and if it's a good article, and if I like it, maybe I'll put it on the podcast. Always try to connect with me. It's pretty cool. Go on my website, www.honestandgay.com, to see what else I'm doing, whether that be through video, whether that be through articles. But thank you so much for listening. You are listening to Honest and Gay, the gayest podcast on the internet, hosted by myself, Diego Gigato, and I hope everyone has the gayest day ever. And remember to be safe and to love one another. And remember, sex and gender identity are two different things. Okay, well, goodbye. Thank you.